Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
In the book, I've got tips for shopping. You know, if you go to green markets instead of chain grocery store, if you go to butcher shops, you're more likely to be able to purchase ingredients just for one. There's also storage tips. You know, you're going to have to use your freezer. Do not be afraid of the freezer. It is key to not wasting things.
Back with us is the ultra-talented chef and restaurateur, Anita Lowe, who has written a truly original cookbook. And that's not easy to do, by the way. It's not easy to do. There are a lot of cookbooks out there. Your book is Solo, A Modern Cookbook for a Party of One. So let's talk about Solo. How did the book come about? What made you want to write it? It doesn't seem like it was really born of loneliness, even though the title would make you think it is. I think it's kind of a bait and switch, Anita.
Maybe. I mean, I've certainly been lonely, you know, as a chef for, you know,
sure,
a good part of my life. But it came about because a friend of mine, David Ransom, and I were on the phone talking about SHARE, which is a breast and ovarian cancer support group that we do a fundraiser for every year. And for some reason, we got on to the subject of cookbook titles with my last name in it, which is Lowe. And so we came across, you know, and we had like 50 titles. It was just this long ideation session. It was really funny. And we're like, Low-cal, low and slow, the braising book.
Like there was drinking.
There wasn't, I swear. But it was really fun. And two of the titles were Alone and Solo. And I was like, oh my God, I have to write that book. That could be funny.
Well, I love that. The first two lines of the book were, I put the low in Solo and the A-Lo in Alone. Did that come out of that evening with David Ransom?
Yes, exactly.
But when you talk about alone, I feel like it's a metaphor. Being solo, it stands for being comfortable in your own skin.
Sure.
And comfortable with being who you are.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. You're the first person that said that.
No, that was sort of clear to me because you give the obligatory jokes of how many relationships you've had that have broken up and all this. But then when you read the book carefully, it's clear that, yes, cooking for yourself becomes more of a pleasure and easier thing to do, but you're not advocating it as a lifestyle.
No. Yeah. I think cooking can be self-reaffirming. I mean, if food is culture and you're cooking what you like to eat, it's about you. It's about who you are. So, food is identity.
Yeah. You wrote this book yourself, right?
Yes.
You're a really good writer.
Oh, thank you.
You say, this book is for urban dwellers who would like to cook a fabulous, sophisticated meal for themselves regardless of their circumstance. Although I have a soft spot for the depressed, jilted single, Solo is also for those who are happiest on their own or those who are part of a fractured family in whatever form. Quite often these days, even if we're not single, we are left alone due to our partner's work/family's social obligation. The book is also for those who have different tastes from their family or partner. Why shouldn't they eat what they crave? And I thought that was really well put because, you know, I'm happily married for a long time, but I do eat a lot of meals by myself because my wife is super active, successful literary agent.
And, awesome.
You know, has, you know, it's like I married up and I hang on for dear life. You know, it's like that's my motto.
I like that.
But eating solo is not a matter of being unattached. We all are eating more and more meals by ourselves.
It's interesting that there's this cultural, taboo, and I'm not quite sure why.
I think it's because the culture is so used to thinking that if you're eating alone, you must be unhappy and maladjusted somehow. Don't you think? I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I guess so. But why? I mean, the thing is, I just can't imagine that everybody hasn't had to eat by themselves like a million times.
It's true. No, but it's funny.
Did you not go to college?
But I mean, I've read a lot of food books and cookbooks, and this was the first book that made me think about how often I eat alone. And the culture is moving further and further in that direction. And of course, everyone talks about the importance of the family table, and that's all well and good and true.
True, yeah.
But the reality is, even if you have kids, if you have a significant other, you are still going to be eating more meals alone than not.
Right, yeah.
What's the best example you can give our listeners of something in the book that best exemplifies the pleasure and satisfaction you can get from cooking for yourself?
You know, I think every person is different and what is pleasurable to them. So I've hopefully had a wide range of foods and types of cuisines, et cetera, in there. There is a duck ragu in there that I actually like only because it makes a bunch of meals out of something that you normally would just throw away.
Uh-huh.
So it's just basically you take the duck carcass and then whatever parts that are inside of the cavity and you make this ragu and it takes a really long time, but at the end, you know, you can freeze, you know, 5 little cups of this sauce and then you've got something really quick. On a weeknight to cook for yourself. And my partner's mother makes this really delicious pepper dip. My partner's father is Lebanese, and her mom is not, but she does all the cooking. She makes this puree of, it's basically just banana peppers, which are a little bit spicy, mixed with feta. It's just a puree. It's very, very simple. Just saute the peppers, put the feta together, and puree it.
So when you were developing the recipes, is it a different process to develop recipes for one, or just a matter of having volumes, or does it require a different way of thinking?
It requires a different way of thinking in that you need to, you know, when you're cooking for four, like everything at the grocery store is packaged for you and your family. When you're cooking for just one person, you have to figure out how to not waste all of that.
Right. And you are, by your own admission, and I'm inventing this phrase, you're a wastophobe.
Yes.
And you can use it, by the way, from now on.
Thank you.
You don't have to give me any attribution. But you're a wastophobe.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
If I have you buying a chicken, for example, or a head of cauliflower, there are enough recipes in that book to get rid of that entire chicken. Yeah, so it's and for each, like if you're using part of that chicken, on that recipe page there'll be a little list of where you can find the rest of the recipes.
Got it. Yeah. Is it safe to say that leftovers are a sort of key to cooking for one?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think that's, in general, the way people should be cooking for many different reasons. I think it's better for the planet, it's better for your wallet, et cetera. But it's more difficult for the single cook only because of the way grocery stores are set up. But,
yeah.
There's ways that in the book I've got tips for shopping. You know, if you go to green markets instead of your chain grocery store, if you go to butcher shops instead of your chain grocery store, you're more likely to be able to purchase ingredients just for one.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, there's also storage tips that will help keep things longer. You know, you're going to have to use your freezer. Do not be afraid of the freezer. It is key to not wasting things.
Is there one thing that all the recipes have in common? Because they're all over the map culturally and ethnically, right?
Yes.
Because that's the way you've always cooked.
Well, that's how I like to eat. I mean, my cooking was perhaps more creative. This is
stripped down.
Well, they're stripped down, but they're a lot of them are more classic, actually. I mean, some things aren't, but like I've got Singapore noodles in there. Like I didn't make that up. Yeah. yeah.
What would you like the takeaway to be for anyone who picks up the book?
Well, I hope that people will get back into the kitchen. I think it's unfortunate that so many people are not cooking anymore. It seems like it's a dying art.
And particularly if you're eating alone, the idea of cooking the meal instead of assembling or ordering out seems like a bridge too far.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be. I mean, you know, there's all those mail order meal kits things. So it's like, why is it so hard to chop a little bit of onion for yourself? I mean, it's just, first of all, when you're cooking for just yourself, there's so much less prep work.
Right.
So it doesn't take, I mean, most of the recipes in my book are like 30 minutes or less. So, yeah. I mean, I hope it'll get people back into the kitchen because it is healthier when you cook for yourself. You know, I hope people will learn to love it.
Yeah. Did your partner get the wrong idea when you told her you were doing this book? Like, are you trying to tell me something, Anita?
Oh, no, not at all. I don't think so. Yeah, she's very understanding.
And it seems to me there's a spiritual quality to the book. You think that cooking for one is a guide to self-love. But I don't think you go as far as to say that cooking for yourself can be a substitute for psychotherapy.
No. No. We could all use some psychotherapy.
But there's certainly an implication that it's helpful to cook for yourself in terms of feeling good about yourself.
Right. I think I've had a lot of people say to me that this book made them think about how far they'd go to cook for themselves and why they wouldn't do that, you know? And so that's interesting to me. I mean, we need to take care of ourselves. If you don't take care of yourself, there's no way you can take care of other people.
That's pretty spiritual.
Okay.
So what's next? Cooking for two, cooking for a crowd, cooking for a dozen.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, well, I'm talking about it. I'd like to continue to write cookbooks, for sure.
Yeah. So now it's time for the All You Can Answer Special Sauce Buffet. So I hope you're ready.
Okay.
I hope you've practiced and studied because these are very, very difficult questions. So who's at your last supper, no family allowed?
Oh, I would love the Obamas to be there. I would love my partner, obviously. I'd love the Waltucks to be there.
Okay.
Haruki Murakami, that would be really cool.
I like this. You're the first person that's ever mentioned Murakami.
Really?
So
my editor is his English language editor.
Really?
And I was like, oh my God, because I think I've read most of his books.
Yeah. That's good. One more.
A Macy Gray there.
Macy Gray.
Yeah.
Wow, another first. I like this. So what are you eating?
Oh, gosh. We're starting with fantastic sushi.
Okay.
Sashimi and sushi.
Sashimi and sushi.
Yes.
All right.
It's omakase.
Omakase.
And we're going all night. Yeah.
So it's just like sushi and sashimi for hours.
Well, no.
All right.
Well, we'll do that, and then we're going to morph into some cooked foods.
All right. Like?
Yeah. There's got to be some sweetbreads.
Okay.
There has to be some pasta somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah. Vegetables?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because,
you greens,
know.
Yeah.
You got to have some greens or else we just busted you.
There's got to be some pea shoots.
Okay.
Yes.
Like sauteed pea shoots with garlic or something?
Exactly, yeah.
All right, I like that.
It needs to be that. I don't know.
Do you have a sweet tooth? Would there be a dessert?
Yeah, there has to be dessert. I don't, you know, I love dessert, but it's not something that I have to have. But if it's my last meal, I'm getting dessert.
Okay, and what's it going to be?
It's either something with lemon curd or...
Like a tart?
Yeah. Or it's something with butterscotch.
Ooh,
yeah.
I share your thing for butterscotch,
yeah,
man. Butterscotch budino, like Nancy Silverton's butterscotch budino.
Oh, I haven't had that. I need
Are you
to have
kidding?
That.
If I knew that, I wouldn't have let you in here.
Oh.
That budino is major, man. It's delicious. Or I like the places that give you those little pitchers with the hot butterscotch sauce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? That's the greatest. So that should be at your last supper.
There you go. That with some, like, mulled in sea salt on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat? Like, if you got home and your partner wasn't there and sort of apropos of your book, but, like, what can you always find in your cupboard and your fridge?
Pasta.
Pasta?
Yeah. So it could be spaghetti mentaiko.
which is?
Manteca is a salted cod or pollock roe that also has some chili in it.
So, and that makes a fine pasta sauce, right?
Yeah, it's delicious, yeah. And it's easy. You just, you know, it's basically just that with some butter or some olive oil. Yeah.
Yeah. I like this. And what's usually in your fridge?
There's always lemons. There's always garlic, anchovies. There's always Parmesan. There's usually some sort of salad green.
Do you have a guilty pleasure?
Oh, yeah. I've got lots of them.
So just give me three. If you have a lot, I'd love to hear three.
I have a thing for processed cheese.
Like the little Swiss Knights or American cheese food, like in the plastic wrapper?
I love American cheese, yeah. I grew up in the Midwest. Uh-huh. I love, and it doesn't make me feel good, but I like Kraft macaroni and cheese with the deluxe version with the little squeeze thing. Yeah. I like that. I like Doritos.
Yeah. Wow, you really are on a roll here.
I like a Big Mac, too. Yeah.
All right. So what's on your nightstand now, book-wise?
Ed Lee gave me his book, which is
Buttermilk Graffiti. We loved having Ed on the
Oh, my God.
Sauce.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
It's just an amazing read.
He's a wonderful writer and a really interesting guy. I really love Ed.
Yeah. What else do I have there? I have a bunch of books that I'm probably never going to read that are...
those are important. I have a lot of those, too.
Yeah. I aspire to read, but it's just not going to happen.
You know, leads that list is Middlemarch. Just put it on your nightstand. It's 800 pages. You're never going to read it, but you're going to impress your friends.
Right, exactly.
Which is really the point of the book.
Yeah, well, no one's coming into my bedroom or my apartment for that matter, but it's...
So it's just been declared Anita Lowe Day all over the world. What's happening on that day?
People are eating. People are eating with abandon.
They're eating with
and
abandon?
They're, yeah. And they're, yeah. And they're trying all different kinds of foods that they've never had before, and they're liking it.
And nobody has to work. They just have to cook and eat and hang out.
There we go. And they're traveling. And they're talking to people, and they're reading. And
cool. So... Yeah. Who would you love to have a one-on-one lunch with just to see how they think?
I would love to have, you know, when I was in college, my favorite author subject was Roland Barthes.
Roland Barthes?
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
Very erudite of you, Anita. Very impressive.
Well, it's been a long time. I probably actually couldn't keep up now.
I see. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Anita Lowe. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And do pick up a copy of Solo, a modern cookbook for a party of one. It's a great read and a great cookbook. So long, Sirius Eaters. We'll see you next time.